Lord willing, I'm going to be flying to a gospel meeting at South Carolina. So pray for us so that we may have a good trip and so on. Okay, so what I'm doing now is just we're using this time to review some of the points that I think are really good that we need to look at more in Deuteronomy, and we're deliberately waiting until October to begin our new book, which will be in the days of the judges. So we're just looking in the Bible itself. You know, look in chapter 2. I mean, I'm sorry. Well, it is 2. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 26. And that's where we're going to be looking at some things here. So Moses is narrating this. He's making the speech. And I don't even want to read all of them. When he sent to Sihon, the idea was that they would not take Sihon's territory from him, but they would pay their way, pay for any expenses as they went, and so on. But Sihon was not willing at all for him to do it. And so in verse 30, Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him, for the Lord hardened his heart and made his heart obstinate, that it might deliver him into thy hand as at this day. And so what the Lord said was, I am going to deliver up Sihon, his land before thee, begin to possess, that thou mayest inherit his land. And so Sihon came out to fight against them and so on. Now look in verse 34. Begin about verse 34. Steve, can you read that, please? All right, now in a minute, I'll let you read a little bit more. Every time you see that utterly destroyed, it has the idea sometimes translated devote. And the word basically means that the thing is an offense to God, and therefore it must be destroyed. So that's what they say here. As we smote him, his sons, all his people. All right, read a little bit further now. Wherever the Lord our God commanded us, that what you said. Okay. Now remember, as we look at this, as Moses describes the cities there, like in verse 36, there was not a city that was too high for us. You see, now what would have been high about the city? The walls. And what had Israel been worried about? The walled cities. And so let's go now into chapter 3, and we'll read a little bit in that one as well. Then we turned and went up by the way to Bashan, and Og the king of Bashan came out against us, and all his people, unto battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto me, Fear him not, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into thy hand, and thou shalt do unto him as thou didst unto Sihon king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So the Lord our God delivered into our hand Og, the king of Bashan, and all his people. We smote him, and we took all of his cities at that time. Now, notice what Moses is pointing out. We took all of his cities at that time. And there was not a city which we took not from them. 60 cities from the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. Now, all right. All right, so this is the area of Bashan, even though it's here, Manasseh. But it's in this northeast corner. That territory up there was Bashan. So that's what they did. So 60 cities. And again, what had the Israelites worried about? The walled cities and everything like that. And all these, verse 5, Jeff, how about reading verse 5, maybe a few more. Wow. All right, so what they've done now is they've taken this east side of the Jordan. So they've gone all the way up here, that entire side. They've all gone up there and taken Og. See? So they've taken that entire side. And the thing is, that was not Canaan. You all realize that. That was not Canaan. Canaan is only the west side. See that? And God promised that he would give them Canaan. So you know what he did? He actually gave them more than he promised. And so instead of people saying he didn't give them all the land, well, good night, he gave them more. So I think that's really an interesting thing. All right, Jeff, I want you to read a little bit more. What I want you to read is go down to... say verse 10 and through verse 11. Big bed. And why was it made of iron? It wouldn't be... Yeah, that's right. It wouldn't be sturdy enough to hold this man. This was a giant. And that's the reason why this is given. So once again, what does this go back to? What does this go back to? You need to remember, what does this go back to? What the children of Israel were afraid of. Do you see how Moses really pounded this home? And he's not through yet. But he pounds this home because what does he want the Israelites now to do? He doesn't want them to fail. As they go on and taking the various cities, he does not want them to fail because there are giants or because there are great walls and everything like that. So he wants them to be able to succeed. All right, I want to give just a little bit of attention here, not much, but in verse 12, this land we took in possession at that time from Aroer, which is in the valley of the Arnon, and half the hill country of Gilead and the cities thereof gave I unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites. And the rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, gave I to the half-tribe of Manasseh. So see, he's giving it, this is the east side, and he's giving it to Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. And so we'll skip some of these things here. All right. We're going to skip. I'm just looking at the things I want to skip. All right. So let's see. I think I'm going to skip over now into chapter 4. So let's look at chapter 4 now. And I'm going to read a little bit of that, and I want you to understand. Now, we've already read some of this before as we studied about the idea of authority. Chapter 4 and verse 2, don't add to the word, don't diminish from it, and so on. And he tells about what God has done. And, all right, we're going to get on down. All right, Steve Parker, will you read some for me? And what I want you to read, please, is read verse 7. Through verse 9. That's good. All right. Now, what two things are called? What two things is attention called to here in verse 7, for example? Look at that. What is the point there? I'd like you to look at it yourselves and conclude. And behold, there was a great silence. What great nation is there that hath God so near to them as the Lord our God is whensoever we call upon him? So a God so immediately available. And had God made himself known and available to the children of Israel? Tell me a few obvious ways he had done that. Huh? Yeah. That pillar of fire? What about Mount Sinai? What did he do on Mount Sinai? And did he speak to them out of Mount Sinai? Remember, the children of Israel were terrified. So he's made himself known unto them. And then look at verse 8. So what's the point there? What great nation is there that hath statutes and ordinances so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? So when you examine the law of Moses, it is so far above all the laws that were around in that society. So what nation has a God like this, and what nation has statutes and ordinances as righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? Now, when you would explain why is this nation so unique? There's no big mystery about it. Why is this nation so unique? Because of the God they have. See? Would they have been that unique if they hadn't had that God? If God had not chosen them, we wouldn't have this. This wouldn't be in our Bible. You see that? So it's a remarkable thing. And so I want to move a little bit further now. I want to begin in verse 9. So Scott, can you read the verse 9? Read verse 9 through 14.
Thank you.
All right, now look back in verse 12. Look back in verse 12. What point is Moses dealing with in that verse? Idolatry. Because when the God appeared to the Israelites, what did he appear as? No form. See, no form. It's a remarkable thing to me. Ye saw no form. And this is not the only time that point is made. But when he said, he commanded, he declared unto you his covenant, even which he commanded you to perform, even the what? The Ten Commandments. You see, this is one of the places where in the Bible it equates the covenant with the Ten Commandments. Now, there are several places in the Bible where it makes that point. So, those Ten Commandments were the covenant, really. They were the essence of the covenant. So, I think that's a remarkable thing. No form. All right? Now then, look in, verse 15. All right, now look back up in verse 12, and remember that. Now in verse 15, take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for you saw no manner of form. Do you see that? See, a second time, that point is emphasized. You saw no manner of form on that day that the Lord spoke unto you in Horeb, which is Sinai, out of the midst of the fire, lest you corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image in the... Well, they weren't likely to do that, were they? What did they do while they were there at Mount Sinai, while Moses was gone? The people said, make us God. And so, what did Aaron do? How dare you say that? What did he do? Well, give me earrings. And he did that. So, lest you corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image in the likeness, in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged bird that flieth in the heavens, the likeness of anything that creepeth on the ground, the likeness of any fish in the water under the earth. And when you think about that, just imagine how many false gods of various forms we can think of with idolaters. In paganism, they had all kinds of things like that. They worshipped everything. All right, let's go a little bit further here. All right, I'm going to go down to... that's 15 through 24. And the idea there, in broad terms, idolatry is forbidden. You are not to worship idols. Not at all. Now then, I'm going to skip again over to 32. Over 4:32. For ask now of the days that were past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man upon the earth, and from the one end of heaven unto the other, whether there hath been any such great thing, whether any such thing as this... I'm having trouble reading my eyes. I'm going to have to do something about them. I'm sorry. All right, 32. Ask of the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man upon the earth, and from the one end of heaven unto the other, whether there hath been any such thing as this great thing is, or hath been heard like it. Did ever a people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of a fire, as you heard and lived? What we have here is the uniqueness of Israel's experiences with God. You see, the uniqueness of Israel's experience. And this is the only place we see this kind of thing. This is in Deuteronomy. So did a people ever hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire, as you have heard? and live? Or has God assayed or tried to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation by trials, by signs and wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by outstretched arm, and by great terrors, according to all that the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Now, think about that. Think about that. When God went and rescued Israel, you think about how much wouldn't it have been easier for him to preserve them alive in the land there? Why in the world have them go down to Egypt? That's going to make it harder, isn't it? They're going to go down in Egypt. They're going to have problems there. Now, how is he going to get them out of Egypt? He's going to go up to the Egyptians and say, please, will you let the people go? Let my people go. Do you remember what happened when Moses went? He and Aaron went to Pharaoh. What did they say? Thus saith the Lord, let my people go. And what did he say? No way, Jose. That's not a quote. No, I'm not going to do that. No way. So what did God have to do? He had to use all of his intimidation, his fears, all his plagues, all the things. Now, why did he do that? Showed his power. And do you realize that he did not pick some wimpy little nation? He picked the strongest empire in that part of the world. And the reason was because he wanted to show his power. He was saying, this is the kind of God I am. So that's the idea. And so that's why he did it the way he did it. And so I think that is a remarkable thing. All right. So under thee it was showed that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God, there is none else besides him. By the way, that's a pretty good verse in speaking of gods, because what does it say about the Lord? There is no God besides. Which would amount to he is the what? Only God. So I think that is a remarkable thing. So God has gone and taken a nation out of the midst of another nation by trials and signs and wonders and by war and by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm and by great terrors and so on. Unto thee it was showed that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God, there is none else beside him. Out of heaven he made thee to hear his voice, that he might instruct thee, and upon earth that he made thee to see his great fire. You've heard his words out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them. So that's the reason why God did it. Now, in verses 35, and that's what I began reading here, 35 through 40. So let me have somebody else to read that. Mike, can you read that?
To you it was shown that you might know that the Lord himself is God. There is none other beside him. Out of heaven he let you hear his voice, that he might instruct you on earth. He showed you his great power, and you heard his words out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved you, their descendants after them, and he brought you out of Egypt, and it was
Now, do you recognize that you may prolong your days? That's also one of the Ten Commandments. You know, so I think that's emphasized a great deal here. All right, now I want to read and give some attention to verses 41 through 44. Okay, Andy, you feel like reading a little bit? All right, 41 through 43. All right. And namely, Bezer in the wilderness, in the plain country, and that's in the south, the Reubenites, and Ramoth in Gilead for the Gadites, and Golan and Bashan for the Manassites. So, three cities. Now, what I want you to do, look in Joshua chapter 20. All right, Joshua chapter 20, verses 1 through 9. Make sure, yeah, Joshua 20, all right, 1 through 9. So somebody read that. Can you read it for me? Okay, all right. All right, so Paul, you can read it, and it's not a difficult thing. What was one involved in this? What was the question about? Yeah, it was unintentional. Now, when he would come, and they had him in six locations, three on one side and three on the other, so that they could get there quickly, and there are several things that I want to mention about this. For example, the Avenger of Blood. Sometimes you look for the Avenger of Blood. You look up that. Well, what it comes from is a man that means the next of kin. That's what it is. The next of kin. Because what man would be the one to avenge his killing somebody? The next of kin. So he would run to that city just as fast as he could. Now, when he went there, he would state his case. You know, he said, "Oh, I've killed somebody unintentionally and all that, and so I don't want the avenger of blood to catch me," and so on like that. What would the elders of that city do? They would investigate, see? They would investigate to see whether it was so or not. If they found that he had actually premeditatedly killed somebody, then they would turn him over to the next kin. But if he hadn't, then he could stay there, and he had to stay there until when? Until the death of the high priest. Might be a year, and might be many years, but that was God's provision so that he would not necessarily die for accidental slaying. So I think that is a remarkable thing, and God said that, all right, to protect the one who had accidentally slain someone. All right. So I think that's a very interesting thing, and God, see, he took notice of that and prepared this, and Moses prepared it too, three on the one side and three on the other side. All right, let's go back now to Deuteronomy. So that began here in the reading that we were doing, but I'm going back now to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And as we get back to Deuteronomy, take a quick glance at chapter 5, beginning in verse 7. What is that dealing with? The Ten Commandments. That's right, the Ten Commandments. So he lists all of them and so on. And then in verse 22, "These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mountain, in the mount out of the midst of the fire, of the cloud." Oh, you know, it's pretty obvious that this was volcanic activity. I don't know why they couldn't pick that up. When you're dealing with volcanic activity, do you want to be around the fire? Because what is the fire? It's kind of glue, glue, and it'll throw all kinds of stuff out. Would you want to be around that fire? The lava spewing out? I don't think Moses would have wanted to do that. This was not that kind of fire. This was a miraculous fire that God was manifesting his own presence by. That's what it was. Now, of course, those that don't believe, they want to make it a volcano. Well, volcanoes don't remain under control very well. So, no, this was not a volcano or anything like that. So, all right. Look in verse 23 now. "It came to pass, when you heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, and while the mountain was burning with fire, that you came near unto me, even all the heads of your tribes and your elders. And you said, Behold, the Lord our God has showed us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. We have seen this day that God doth speak with man, and he liveth. Now therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us." So this was not just a spark. They call it a great fire. "If we hear the voice of the Lord any more, we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that hath heard the voice of the living God speaking out of the midst of the fire as we have, and live? Go thou near and hear all that the Lord our God shall say, and you speak unto us all that the Lord your God shall, the Lord our God shall speak unto them, and the unto thee, and we will hear it and do it." So I think the idea here is, Jeff, I'm going to let you read again. Read 28 through 30. Yeah.
"Then the Lord heard the voice of your words, and he spoke to me. The Lord said to me, I have heard the voice of the words of the people which they have spoken to you. They are right in all they have spoken. Oh, that they have had such a great heart in them, that they would fear me and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever.
All right. Now, how would you express that when you're talking about God and he says, read it like you think God would have said it in verse 4, I mean verse 29. Yeah. Oh, that there. You see, there's a kind of a poignancy here because what is God wanting them to do? He's wanting them to do that. And he says, oh, that there were such a heart in them always, that they might do my will. And what does God know? That they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. So it's a very, very sad thing. All right, now then, I want to go on into chapter 6. And I don't know if I've ever told you before, but chapter 2 and verse 4 particularly. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. What does that verse begin with? What word did that verse begin with? Hear. The word here is Shema. And this is typically called the Shema, because that is the word that it starts with, hear. And so I'll tell you all this little story, maybe to impress it on your minds. One time I got a call from a fella. He was wanting a handout. In retrospect, I figured out that's what he was after. But when he did, he called me and he told me that he was a Jew and that he needed help. So I said, well, all right, I'll meet you, because I didn't get many calls from Jews. I had very few studies with Jews through the years, and I don't think from anybody who was a practicing Jew. And it turned out he was not a practicing Jew. But anyway, I drove to the motel where he was. And so we got out, and he got out, and we met, shook hands. And so I asked, so you are a Jew? And he said, yes. And he told me about how he had studied the law, and how he had studied in school and all that stuff like that. I didn't believe him. But I wasn't going to just let it go. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Can you tell me what the Shema is? How dare you? As if I'm insulting him. He didn't have a clue what the Shema was. He was trying to bluff it. So I said, if you had given the right answer, I would help you. But I'm not going to help you now, because you're just lying. And I didn't help him. Not at all. Not about to help him. I wanted him to learn something. I don't know whether he did or not. I doubt it. But he learned that I'm not going to help him when he's lying and pretending. Just aggravating. Anyway, this is the Shema. And so now you're richer for knowing that. So in this passage, this chapter is one of the most important chapters in the book of important chapters. He says, this is the commandment of the statutes, the ordinance which the Lord your God hath commanded to teach you, that you may do them in the land whither you go over to possess it. Once again, there's that promise, that you may go over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, keep all of his statutes and commandments which I command thee this day. You and your son, and who else? Your grandson. All the days of thy life. that your days may be prolonged. There's that statement again. Hear, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee. And then in verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy might. I mean, with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be upon thy heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Thou shalt bind them for a sign on thy hand, and they shall be for frontlets between thine eyes, as if keeping the attention focused forward, and so on. Okay, well, we'll stop there.